So this evening we're serving a sarsaparilla braised short rib with a mustard jus, pickled beets, ramps, and turnips. Follow that up with a octopus pastrami with a carrot puree, a salsify foam, and a little fiddlehead fern. We're also doing a fried sunchoke with a wasabi creme fraiche, caviar. And last but not least, we're doing a mini paella with a bomba rice cake, lobster, mussels, and rock shrimp with a little butifarra and andouille sausage.
Now, if you can believe it, that was only one quarter of the menu that I sampled that night at Kiowa Island Club. I was lucky enough to get an invite to one of the most exclusive dinners in the private club world, hosted by Diana DeLucia of Golf Kitchen. The full story is up next.
Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news, and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
I'm delighted to have you join me for another edition of Private Club Radio. This is episode number 68. And on this episode, I'm going to take you on a trip with me to the Kiowa Island Golf Club in South Carolina, where I had the honor of attending the Friends of James Beard dinner hosted by Diana DeLucia of Golf Kitchen. The evening featured four of the top chefs in the private club world, and my recorder was along for the ride. What I hope to do is tell the story of that evening for you because it was truly a special night, and at the same time give you some insights into what some of the most talented chefs and some of the most exclusive clubs around the country are doing to elevate the dining experience for their members. Here's Chef Doug Blair, executive chef of the Kiowa Island Club, to tell us a little bit about the club and what it was like to host the top talent in the private club culinary world.
Kiowa Island's a really special place. Can you describe it to folks who've never been here, what it's like here and what makes it special?
Yeah, Kiowa Island is a golf resort island, and the Kiowa Island Club is a private club that is owned by the master developers of the island. And at this stage, we have four clubhouses, a spa, and a sports pavilion, and just and also a sporting club just off island. So it's a really special place. You know, it has its exclusivity, but it's also public at the same time as far as the island itself goes. And it's just, you know, for so many people, it's a real family tradition. It's where, you know, a lot of their holidays and special events and everything have, really, on an annual basis, people just flock to the island, and it's always had a very special history.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous place. So what is it like to have all these chefs come and to your place and be the host of it? What was that like for you?
Oh, it was really thrilling. I mean, like I say, some of them are friends now for a couple of years, and people that I haven't met before, and it's been a blast. I mean, I've got an incredible staff who's helped support me to do this, and without them, I couldn't have done it at all. And they enjoy the camaraderie and they, you know, just the time together with all of these fantastically talented chefs. So it's been a ball.
And one of those talented chefs is Rye Waddington of Winged Foot. I caught up with Rye during the evening. We discussed his menu, trends in the private club industry, and his inspiration.
I'm here with Chef Rye Waddington. He's going to describe the dishes that we're having this evening here.
Okay, so our first one is a one-hour poached egg that we cook sous vide at 62 degrees Celsius, and it's served with spring vegetables, morel mushrooms, ramps, fiddleheads, fava beans, English peas, and some barley, and then with a little black truffle vinaigrette and parmesan wafer. The next one is a slow-cooked pork cheek with Anson Mills rice grits and some sherry mostarda. And the last dish over here is cured hamachi with creme fraiche, ruby grapefruit caviar, pickled vegetables, and then some microgreens.
Yeah, everything looks delicious. And this is the last station I'm going to have of the evening, so I'm really excited to try what you've got here. What keeps you excited, and what really brings you passion and excitement in the kitchen, Rye?
It's the seasons. Living in the Northeast, in New York, we get four definite seasons. So we're always excited when spring comes around, and then in summertime, you know, the great produce and the tomatoes that we get. And then it's really nice to go back into fall and winter and cook those low and slow dishes like like the pork cheeks and the different braises. So the fact that we get to change the menu every week, there's always something going on. So
yeah, that's excellent. And you've actually done a farm to table for a long time. Can you tell folks about that?
Yes, I have a restaurant back in Australia, Waddington's at Kiganya, which is on a 850-acre farm. It was registered organic up until a few years ago because of the blackberry problems we have. So we slaughter our own beef, grow all our own chickens, grow 95% of the fruit and vegetable that we use on the restaurant. And it's more a way of life than it is to be trendy to say we do farm to table. It's sort of the way I grew up, and my mother and my grandfather all did the same sort of thing. So,
right. What do you see as coming down the road in terms of culinary, you know, new trends and things like that that people should be aware of?
I think if it's specific to the club industry, I think the memberships are so much more knowledgeable now. So the food and beverage game has to be as high as any of the great restaurants. You know, for me in New York City, our members can choose to go and eat in New York City, or they can come choose and eat with us. So you've got to be changing all the time. And I think new trends come and go, but if you stick with great produce and great product, whether it's your beef, your poultry, or the pork products you get, then you can't go wrong.
Yeah. What inspires you, Ray?
Apart from just the cooking and seeing the young interns and like Chrissy here, who's come down with me. She's been with me for 6 years, and she hadn't worked in a kitchen, and now she's my kitchen manager. So to see the growth of the kids that have come in, and whether it's from Johnson Wales or the CIA, to see them grow and mature and become great chefs, and that's, you know, that is very rewarding.
So it sounds like you're pretty excited for the future of the culinary world here.
It's going to be a really bright future, and I'm so happy that we got to come down here to Kiwa. Chef Doug and his team have just been so accommodating, and the whole Charleston area is just, I mean, as far as food and wine goes, it's as one of the best cities I've ever been to.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much, Ray.
No problem, mate.
Next up was Chef Anthony Giacopinello of Sabonic Golf Club. We discussed his menu as well as the differences between running the kitchen at a restaurant and at a private club.
So what are we looking at here, Anthony?
All right here we have an oxtail ravioli. We braised the oxtail, made a stuffing, ricotta cheese, mascarpone cheese, parmesan cheese, bound together with some egg yolks, fresh homemade pasta, and seared foie gras on top. Then we have a play on ratatouille with all the brunoise vegetables. And then here we have an Iberico ham leg. We slice it really thin with homemade mozzarella, which we made yesterday, with tomato confit, extra virgin olive oil, and a balsamic drizzle.
And I gotta say, that's actually been my favorite dish here.
Oh, thanks.
I'm an Italian, so.
Yeah, we keep the Italian alive with that. Then here we have a two-hour olive oil poached salmon with homemade pickled cucumbers, with a citrus glaze with some shredded carrots, garlic, and ginger.
Wow. So I did a little reading up on you in your story, Anthony, and you kind of came from a background where you dealt with meat a lot. Can you tell folks about that?
I have done a lot of meat, especially at La Grenouille, where I work. The French love their meat and even their organs, a lot of kidneys and things like that, even frog legs.
That's not really your thing, but you learned how to cook it.
I sure did. They drill it into you like it's like walking.
So what inspires you, or what are you passionate about?
Passion? It's pretty much just trying to put smiles on people's faces, honestly, through food. You want them not only to love the food, but to long for more of your food. And it's a tough thing to do. And on events like this, when people keep coming back and saying, that was awesome, I need one more.
Yeah.
Then you know you kind of hit a nerve, you know.
Yeah.
So repeat when they say, I had this twice already tonight. It makes it all worth it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to get my second batch of mozzarella here in a second. Now, let's talk about the difference between restaurants, the outside restaurant world, and the private club world. And a lot of times there's a stigma. Let's talk about that and what you think of that.
Well, it's a big difference. They say, you know, restaurant chefs can't always be club chefs, but club chefs can be restaurant chefs. When you're in a restaurant, it's yours. You do what you want. It's your recipes, your things. When you come to a club, you have to cater to them. In our club at Sabonic, we don't say no to our members. We try to do everything possible for them, so they have the ultimate experience. You know, they pay the money to come in, and we just want them to have the best experience at our club. So when they come to other clubs, we're the comparison. You know, at Sabonic, they do this. At Sabonic, they do that. That's our goal as a club. In a restaurant, you know, if they don't like it, they just tell them to leave.
But you still take a lot of pride in that, it sounds like.
We do. We do. And, you know.
Would you find it and tell other chefs out there that it's a rewarding business?
Absolutely. It is. But, again, it's not for everybody. You know, I tell everybody not to do it, believe it or not, because it's a test. If they say, okay, I won't do it, that means they didn't have the heart for it. It's the ones that are like, you know what, I don't care what you say, I'm still going to do it. Those are the guys that's going to make the difference in the future.
You know? Well said, Anthony. Thank you, man. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure to meet you.
And one of those up-and-coming guys is the person I chatted with next, Chef Jose Carlos Fabrega of Royal Isabella Golf Club on the island of Puerto Rico. He first started his career not in the kitchen, but as a caddy at Royal Isabella. Eventually, he did find his way into the kitchen, though, which I'm sure members are happy about. Here he is to tell us a little bit about it.
When you're in the kitchen, what makes you excited? Is it a new ingredient or a new preparation?
All the ingredients we have in the island, the fish, all the kind of vegetables, and I like food because I fish. I go fishing every week and try to bring all my fish to the restaurant. So it makes it super interesting. And I have my farm in the restaurant. So I mix that two things, and it's very fun to me to. And I change the menu every day, so it makes it more fun for me. So,
Chef Jose won my award for the most creative ingredient. He actually pickled a plantain flower from the island of Puerto Rico, which was then served alongside a fish that could only be caught at the hour of midnight. So, pretty amazing stuff right there. Once again, here's Chef Doug Blair.
Did you have any aha moments, or did you come to any realizations during these 4 or 5 days? Any learn any new techniques or share stories together?
Well, yeah. I mean, it, just working beside each other. You know, we've been in the kitchen together for 3 days now, and I think everyone had that. You just watch it happen. I mean, these are real world class chefs, you know. But just the little things that are mundane and a daily thing to you, someone comes over and just says, "Whoa, what are you doing here?" And it's like, "Oh, well, you know, this is just something we work with," and you know, from something that is simple to us, and then Jose Carlos comes in from Puerto Rico and brings, you know, plantain flowers, the giant flower on a banana tree.
Yeah,
and turns around and he's pickled it. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't even think, nobody thought about that. So every little things like that, everyone was, you know, every day there were little aha moments here and there. And it's a lot of fun, just real.
What makes working at a private club like the Kiowa Club, what makes that special and different from the restaurant experience, and what makes that rewarding for you?
Well, having worked in independent restaurants for a great part of my career, when I didn't know that I would ever end up in a private club experience, but specifically with the Kiowa Island Club, I came on board because this concept we're working with, that I'm involved in, is very much it's very much independent restaurant-like within a club. Mm-hmm. A lot of private club restaurants are club restaurants, and they can sometimes become a little bit homogenized. And this and these other subsequent clubs that we're working with have decided to take a different approach to it and approach it like an independent restaurant. You know, the original owners that came up with this concept said, you know, we want to be able to come into an incredible clubhouse like this. You know, this Voisey's design of architecture and is amazing on the approach. And then you walk in and you're like, oh, okay, what a beautiful clubhouse, fantastic. You walk upstairs and all of a sudden you're transported into something, you know, that Bentel designed the interiors, and we shook hands and were team members with Tom Colicchio, and we all worked together and came up with this, which is a very, you know, customly crafted restaurant, so that you come up and all of a sudden you're just in a different world. Right. I mean, not only just the view from the way the clubhouse is elevated and the vistas as you look across, which some people look, you know, compare to the Sahara or something, you know,
yeah, right.
But that you're in something that you would find in a large metropolitan city like New York or you know, Atlanta or Chicago. So it's thrilling. I mean, we love it. I mean, nobody that works here takes this for granted.
Yeah.
And we tend to keep employees for quite a while.
That's nice. What keeps you motivated or inspired?
seasonality, whatever's coming off boats, whatever, you know, from the fishermen. I would, right when you walked up, I was talking to my local farmer who he is a mile and a half up the road, and taking the chefs out to show them that, you know, just walking the rows of produce and being able to have that kind of sourcing that close, that's what stimulates us. Sure. We walk out and look at it and just we're in heaven, and we look around, oh, well, let's do this, let's do that. And all of a sudden dishes just, you know, unfold in front of us. And especially when we go out there as a community, you know, a few of us, and we start having this discussion, and suddenly a menu is designed, you know, by the time we get back to the clubhouse. Yeah,
yeah. So now you change your menus every week. Is that right?
We print our menu every day. Lunch doesn't change as much. Lunch is, you know, there's a certain expectation and, you know, sure. Lunch isn't always the place to experiment a lot, but dinner, yeah, it's all reflective as to what's coming off the boats out of the farms.
And you have you seen a big difference in that from the membership being a little bit more activated or more excited about coming here?
Absolutely. We've seen our numbers be more consistently higher than, you know, over the years as we've sort of filled in a lot of the valleys, you know, in business that you tend to have in sort of a cyclical, you know, environment. And it's becoming just more and more that we're just pretty busy most of the time. So,
yeah, I mean, a private club can't be all things to all people, but it seems like you're making a step in that direction by changing things up and the seasonality.
Well, trying to keep it fresh and trying to exceed people's expectations so that there's surprises every time they come in, you know, to some degree. Yep. While keeping, you know, some of the favorites, you know, always in, you know, in stock and on the menu, but, you know, in between those, kind of weaving new things in and showing people new items and, you know, fantastic. New techniques. Yeah.
The evening was capped off with a live auction of some pretty incredible once-in-a-lifetime experiences.
Who's going to jump in at 18? 1700 final call, and fair warning, at 17... $100. Do we have a match over there? 1700. Final call and fair warning at $1,700. Back right over here at 17. Let's give the beautiful couple a nice round of applause. Thank you very much.
Tens of thousands of dollars were raised that evening to benefit the James Beard Foundation. So as you can imagine, putting together an event like this is no easy undertaking. So I finally, at the end of the night, got to catch up with the host of the evening, Diana DeLucia of Golf Kitchen, who just recently authored the book of the same name, to get a little bit more insight into what it took to put this on.
Well, we've been working for 4 months, as you know, on this event, and the chefs have been cooking for 4 days straight. There's recipes here that there's some fish here that's been caught at moonlight, and you can't catch them at any other time but moonlight from Puerto Rico and shipped over here just for the event. Gabriel, what did you think of the food tonight?
I loved it. My favorites, I think, were the short rib. There was a Chef Doug Blair had a jambalaya that I enjoyed, and Chef Anthony had a mozzarella dish that I really loved.
Oh, I loved his foie gras. That was my favorite.
Yeah,
the Hudson Valley foie gras dish from Sabonic was one of my favorites.
It must make you feel very proud to put on an event like this and have all these people come from around the world for something that you really started.
Well, what I could say is that it's been 15 years in the making, from Australia to New York with a magazine that I had in the food industry, to Golf Club World, which was my first book, and to Golf Kitchen. But it is astounding the support I'm getting from the golf clubs. The private golf clubs and the memberships are really supporting it, and it's going global, and it's really exciting. That's all I can say. And it's overwhelming. Mr. Patrick Melton has gone out of his way to make sure Golf Kitchen is a success tonight, and he's housed the chefs, and they've hosted us and taken us all over Charleston and on yacht cruises and you name it.
Yeah.
And we're really excited, and we want to keep going. So
yeah. So what's next and what's in store for Golf Kitchen and the brand?
Well, Golf Kitchen is going to be another book, Golf Kitchen America, and then we have a lot of ideas with TV shows and a magazine possibly, and it's endless.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So this had to be a really rewarding night for you.
Yeah, I haven't started crying yet, but I was crying for 2 hours during the day, but I probably will when I have to open my mouth, you know, to the audience.
Yeah, so are you gonna address the crowd here in a little bit, and what are you going to talk about?
Just going to say thank you, because I can't do anything else but say thank you. It's for me, it's overwhelming, and it's the same as a Wingfoot event. It was overwhelming, and it's still overwhelming. Yeah. I mean, Gabriel, you know what it's like. You have a book, right?
Sure, yeah.
It's overwhelming that people are interested in your product, your art, or your writing, and to have that audience is incredible.
What's been the most interesting realization you've had during this whole journey?
The most pivotal moment in my entire life was meeting Mr. Michael Pascucci at Sebonac Golf Club in 2010. And my life changed from that moment. He's been my mentor ever since, and he has guided me on my career from 2010 to now. And everything that he does, is any word that utters out of his mouth, I will do. I can confide in him, I can tell him anything, and he will say, Diana, you know, and tells me the right direction to go in, and Mr. Colin Burns from Wingfoot Golf Club.
Nice. Excellent.
They are my mentors, and they're my pivotal turning points in my life.
Well, I must say it was an incredible evening. I did not leave, and I'm sure no guests left with any hunger in their bellies. It was just delicious, every dish from beginning to end. It was quite spectacular, and I took home a beautiful copy of Golf Kitchen, the book. It was signed by all the chefs. Just a lovely book. If you have not gotten a copy of this book, I would highly recommend that you check out www.golfkitchen.com. It's filled with recipes, with beautiful photographs that Diana took, as well as this history and the story of some of the most exclusive golf kitchens out there, www.golfkitchen.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed that little trip to South Carolina with me. Like I said, just a wonderful evening out there. Now we're going to take a trip up to Boston, Massachusetts on this edition of Board Chats.
And now it's time for Board Chats, presented by Concert Golf Partners. A behind-the-scenes look inside real boardrooms, with special guest, Peter Nanula.
Welcome to another edition of Board Chats presented by Concert Golf Partners. I'm joined as always by Peter Nanula, CEO and Chairman of Concert Golf Partners. And today we have Jason Adams, who's the golf course superintendent at the Blue Hill Country Club in Boston. Jason, how are you today?
I'm great, Gabe. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Peter, thank you for joining us as always. How are things at Concert Golf?
Boy, things are fantastic. Spring is coming, and so people are excited about golf again up in the Northeast.
Yeah, they've really got the bug after the Masters, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was a really exciting one, right?
That was. So what's happening at Concert Golf? Are there any new properties? Is there anything you guys are doing?
Yeah, you know, I think about five more longtime member-owned clubs will recapitalize with us this year. We've got two done, another one here next month. We've spent over $15 million on capital projects last year, including Blue Hill. You'll ask Jason here in a moment. But, you know, just another month, Gabe, another series of boardrooms that I've been in on the road with the same exact issues. Board members sitting around a big long table talking about the bank loan they took out for their last renovation, the list of capital projects on their wish list that are waiting. And then a bunch of assessments on their members and dues increases that lead to sort of stagnant membership trends, right? You see that in a lot of the work you do. And I just keep saying there's a better way.
Yep.
But boards have to be open-minded. So yeah, anyway, that's kind of the purpose of these podcasts, is just to have an open discussion about different alternatives.
Well, it's great to have you and your group on here. So today, as mentioned, we have Jason Adams, who's the golf course superintendent at Blue Hill Country Club outside of Boston. Jason, how long have you been a golf course superintendent? And have you always worked at member-owned equity clubs?
Yes, I have. I've been a superintendent now for 19 years. they've gone by pretty quickly, but yeah, all of them at member-owned equity clubs.
Excellent. So in those 19 years, I'm sure lots of things have changed. I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the trends that are happening and what you've seen in those 19 years of experience.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's funny. You know, you're getting old when you think back and you remember the old fairway mowers like F10s and these big beast of mowers driving down the fairway at 3/4 of an inch of height. Today's standard fairways are 1/2 inch and lower. I can remember setting greens mowers at 5/32nds, where now we're down to 100 thousandths of an inch every single day. So the technology and equipment has been dramatically different. And the chemistries and fertilizers we have to use today, they just last so much longer. They're so much better. Mm-hmm. It's really come a long way very quickly.
I bet it has. Now, I'm sure this green movement that's been going on, I'm sure is also affecting things. So how does that affect the way the courses are being sprayed or the chemicals that are being used on the course?
Sure. Definitely people are more aware now of kind of what was happening out there. I mean, years ago, we used to, you know, spray some materials like mercury even on greens and, for fungicide use. So a lot of that has gone away now. Really, a lot of the materials that we're using today are much, much safer, especially to the golfers out there. A lot of the heavy metals and some of the organic fertilizers have gone away. So there definitely is a push to, you know, superintendents are more environmentalists now. We want to do the right thing. So, we have a lot more focus on us, with today's world. So we definitely want to do what's right.
What for you, and this is just a curious guy who knows nothing about agronomy asking, but what for you is the best type of surface for, let's say, greens or for fairways? What type of grass do you like working with?
So up here in the Northeast, we deal with a lot of annual bluegrass, which is not necessarily what we want, but it does make a pretty good surface when it's good, if it's not too hot. But typically, we've been overseeding with bent grasses over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the best move. We've got the best surface, less fertilizer use, less water use, and you can put a little more stress on it through the growing season.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It always amazes me. I, in my own lawn, put in this stuff called Zoysia. Everyone else in my neighborhood has that crabgrass type stuff. And so there's good and bad because it looks beautiful and it's like soft to the touch. But then I feel like I'm always having to, get the weeds out of it, and it browns out in the summer. And so I respect people who are into into agronomy, and I'd like to learn more about it myself. I think it's really interesting. But next question for you, how long has Concert Golf been involved with Blue Hill Country Club?
They have been involved for about 16 months now.
Yeah, and what sort of changes have you seen there, Jason, since they've been involved with the club?
I'll tell you, just on my end, I mean, I'm not even going to talk about the rest of the club because we've been doing a lot there too, but we have renovated renovation of the driving range. We created a new 50,000 square foot short game area, practice area.
Nice.
We renovated an entire hole on our Challenger course, which is our other 9-hole golf course. We've installed a new above ground fuel storage tank and a 1,300 square foot fertilizer building and new offices and break room facilities in the maintenance area. And in the middle of all that, we did a huge environmental cleanup. Mm-hmm. So all that's been done in about 8 months.
Wow, that's a lot. And we see clubs all over the country that are really spending millions in renovations right now. So you got to do that, it sounds like, to just keep with the Joneses at this point. I mean, you're in competition with clubs around you, I assume. And have you seen some benefits from adding these facilities at your club?
Absolutely. Everybody's very excited about the short game area. I mean, let's face it. That's where, the game is to be played, on the greens and around the greens. That's where you score. So that's one thing we really lacked here at the club. We had a practice facility. It was very poor, wasn't maintained well. It wasn't built well. Now we have a huge facility, and that's what everybody's really going to in the area. So it definitely puts us in competition.
Do you think you would have had that if Concert hadn't have come in and helped you out there at Blue Hill?
I don't think so. I mean, I've been here for 9 years. This will be my 10th season. And, for years, we sat around those tables that, Peter has talked about and discussed things. And, the intention was there, but we just never had the funding. It was the infrastructures were always falling apart, whether it's air conditioning units or, there was always another reason to kind of keep pushing, kicking the can down the road and maybe next year.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of us run into that problem a lot with clubs, and it's good that there's a proactive approach here with Concert. I really admire that about the company. Now, Jason, from your own perspective, what's it like? You know, you've worked in other clubs, you know, that aren't Concert Golf managed. What's been the difference here having them there, and what's the support like that you're getting?
It's incredible. I'll tell you, it's a breath of fresh air. You know, nothing against the member-owned equity clubs, but, you know, again, you sat around the table, we talked about things over and over, you reinvented the wheel, you're constantly having new members and change of board members. So it's tough to kind of stay on task year after year. Mm-hmm. So now I'm asked to run my operation. It's myself. You know, I reach out to Peter and his team occasionally if the decision to be made, or discuss things with the general manager. So we have a lot of leniency to kind of run our operation now, as we see fit.
Are you also getting access to things that maybe would have been more difficult to procure, or are you getting certain discounts and things that maybe you weren't getting before now that you're part of a group?
Yeah, we've partnered with all the major chemical fertilizer manufacturers, equipment manufacturers. So we have great buying power now is what we have. So yeah. Just last year alone, I believe we saved a little over $34,000 just in chemical and fertilizer. So what we were able to do is we're still able to offer the exact same agronomic plan as that we did before, mm-hmm. but for a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, and that benefits the members. It keeps their dues down, and I'm sure they appreciate that.
Absolutely. You know, even on the equipment side of things, I mean, I'll just give you an example. Last year, or this spring rather, we purchased one piece of equipment. That one piece of equipment we saved $6,000 on.
Wow. Yeah, well, it all adds up. It all adds up, absolutely. So can you give me some examples, Jason, of what would have been a difficult decision? Because you've talked about how the decision-making process is now a little bit easier. You've got a little bit more autonomy there. What was it like prior to Concert Golf coming in?
You know, again, you talk about things. You get people on your greens committees. And don't get me wrong, I probably had great greens committees in comparison to some of these clubs. But there's always that one or two guys on there that maybe – you know, stands in your way a little bit. We recently just took a number of trees down on the property this winter that I've been wanting to take down for years, that we haven't had the funding for. And that even in years past, some trees we took down were controversial, if you will. And you maybe had to leave a couple of trees just to satisfy those people. Whereas now I make the phone call to, you know, either Peter or our regional agronomist. We have a 10-minute conversation about it, and then we move forward and we just get it done.
That's really a breath of fresh air, I would imagine.
Absolutely. It makes things go so much quicker.
Sure. How about the morale of you and your staff working there? What's that done having a capital partner come in?
Well, you know, I've been pretty lucky. I've got a great staff. I've pretty much had a repeat staff here for almost 10 seasons now. And they've been through the tough times. You know, they've been through the times where we had to cut budgets and cut labor hours. They see what's going on. They see all the projects. You know, they take so much pride in their work. And now with a new office building and break room facility, they have a clean, safe place to eat their lunch now. We can have morning meetings. They take as much pride and get excited with things as I do now. It's unbelievable.
And that makes such a difference to have a team that's all really united against, you know, or united with one particular cause and to have that morale. That's so important at a club. The members see that, I feel like, you know, when people love what they do, it's very easy to see that.
I agree completely.
Hate it too.
Unfortunately, those are easier voiced.
Exactly. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining us here on Board Chats, presented by Concert Golf Partners. And I invite our listeners to check out Concert Golf Partners by going to their website, concertgolfpartners.com.
Join us next month for another edition of Board Chats, presented by Concert Golf Partners.
Well, that is going to do it for this edition of Private Club Radio. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Want to remind you to check out golfkitchen.com. Pick up the book. It's worth it. It's a beautiful edition just to learn a little bit more about some of the interesting things happening in the culinary world. I hope you've enjoyed this series we've been doing on Private Club Radio on food and beverage. I want to remind you that this was the result of our listeners voting for this topic over at privateclubradio.com vote. So if you have not cast your vote, go on over there to privateclubradio.com/vote and let me know what you'd like to hear on another edition of Private Club Radio. Until next week, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing and consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.